Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You are not going to believe it. I can't believe it. And you are not going to believe it either. Have you heard what Ben has done? Have you? I mean, Ben, son of Joseph. Ben and I went to school together. We used to test each other when the exams were coming up. You know, I would get questions for him and he would get questions for me. We would ask each other these questions to test each other about the law of Moses and all that God had said to him about the tabernacle and the Ten Commandments, the priesthood and the promise of the coming Messiah. Those were really good times. But about a year ago, he turned his back on everything. And not only did he turn his back on everything, he seems to have begun to speak against Moses and against God. You know what he's done? He stopped keeping the Sabbath. I mean, it's astounding. He's joined this group of people who say that the Messiah has already come. And he's also stopped keeping the food laws, which is causing untold grief to his mum at dinner time. But get this, you're not going to believe this one. On the Day of Atonement, when the whole of Israel gathers together, everyone goes to Jerusalem. It's the most important day on our whole calendar. I have to actually try to persuade them to even turn up. And get this, as the high priest is taking the sacrifice into the Holy of Holies, Ben leans my way and he says, "That's not the real temple, you know." And then he says, "And that's not the real priest either." And then he says, "And that sacrifice is not pleasing to God." Well, my jaw nearly hit the floor. I said to him, "What are you talking about? Are you saying you've got no sin that needs to be forgiven or something?" Well, he starts talking about this Jesus being the high priest. And I mean, Jesus died like 30 years ago. I mean, you did hear these rumours of him rising again, but, you know, dead people coming back to life, that's all a bit freaky for me. So, I mean, I love Ben, but I just think he's lost the plot. And what all seems strange at the beginning has actually become downright dangerous now, because not only is there all this building pressure from the Romans around us, some of our leaders have actually sought out some of the teachers of this group that Ben belongs to and put them in jail. And so it's not going to be too long until they start to target Ben and put him in jail. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have really been trying to meet with him and to talk with him about the scriptures. I've been trying to show him from the scriptures how the law of Moses, we ought to follow that. It's a good thing. It's from God. And keeping the Sabbath, and that's just normal sort of stuff. We should do that. As well as the food laws and the like. And the other thing I say to him is, how could this Jesus be a high priest? First of all, he doesn't belong to the family of Aaron, which is where all the high priests come from. He doesn't even belong to the tribe of Levi. He's from a completely different place. How could it be? Well, I thought I was really getting through to him. He was beginning to waver a bit. And especially he began to waver when I began to point out to him that the teachers in his group that he belongs to, which say the Messiah has already come, that they've been put in jail, they've been put in prison. I said to him, isn't it obvious? If they're in prison, then obviously not blessed or ordained by God. I mean, if they're suffering, then they can't be God's people, can they? I mean, that's just straightforward thinking, isn't it? Well, I thought we were making some headway until this preacher turns up at their meeting and he actually writes his sermon out and he gives it to them to read. And they read it in their group all the time. He did mention his name to me, the preacher. I can't remember the name at the moment. But now, Ben has come back to me all steely-eyed and more confident than ever before. And you know what he's doing, the rotter? He's actually taking the scriptures that I was trying to use to prove him wrong, and he is now using those same scriptures to prove me wrong. It's like we're back in school. He starts talking to me about this new order of priesthood, this Melchizedekian thing. I mean, I've heard of Melchizedek. He's in Psalm 110 and way back there, there's this brief appearance in Genesis, but I really haven't thought about Melchizedek much at all. And Ben has been saying to me that the law of Moses and the priesthood are intimately connected. And I agree, you can't have one without the other. And he went on to say that if there's a change in the priesthood, therefore the law of Moses necessarily is changed. And I said, well, yeah, that's obvious if there's a change in the priesthood. But to have a change in the priesthood, you'd need to have like a perfect sacrifice offered by a permanent priest, a high priest. And I mean, well, has that ever happened? And that's when Ben starts talking about Jesus coming back to life again. Ben keeps saying to me, this is the whole point. He keeps saying, we have a high priest who offered a perfect sacrifice and now is permanent forever. He says it's this Jesus is the priest who, when he died, offered the one true sacrifice for sins and obtained an eternal deliverance for his people. And Ben goes on to say this, that the priests we have seen and the tabernacle, the temple that we know, that and them, that all just a shadow of the reality, and the reality is in this permanent, perfect priest called Jesus. Now, I have been thinking about that a bit, which it seemed a bit weird to me at first, but you know, in Exodus 25, Moses, it does say there that God says to Moses, make sure you make everything according to the pattern I've given you. Which it really seems to suggest that the pattern that he's given is a pattern of something that's real in heaven. Which is exactly where Jesus has gone. I mean, goodness. If Jesus is this promised Melchizedekian new order forever high priest, that would mean that there is a new priesthood, and that would mean that the old priesthood has gone and that the covenant, the law of Moses would have to change. I mean, is there anything in the scriptures that would cause us to expect anything like that to happen, like a new covenant turning up? Oh, actually, Jeremiah said something. Let me find that. Where is that? Yeah, here it is. Time is coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant. Gee, with the people of Israel and the people of Judah. It will not be like the covenant I made with their forefathers when I took them by the hand and led to lead them out of Egypt, because they did not remain faithful to my covenant, and I turned away from them, declares the Lord. Time is coming, Jeremiah says. This time that is coming is the time of the last days. I mean, is it the last days now? Well, if it was the last days, it'd be the time of the new covenant. Could I have missed it? But no. Ben is wrong. Ben is wrong, because look at what Jeremiah says. Look at what he says, that he's going to make this covenant with the people of Israel and the people of Judah. Ha! He's wrong. Although he did say something about Jesus being the new Israel, and like the sort of the 12 disciples were the heads of a new 12 tribes. Well, that would sort of make sense, because not every Israelite person is following Jesus, but lots are. So maybe not all Israel is really Israel. And I suppose that would make sense, because the people of Israel, those northern 10 tribes, they don't even exist anymore. It's pretty hard to make a covenant with someone that doesn't exist. Well, Jeremiah certainly was right when he said here that there was a problem with the law, but the problem with the law was us. And so the law of Moses actually taught us that not only we didn't keep the law, but that we couldn't keep the law because we didn't want to keep the law. The law told us that we sinned, but it also told us that we wanted to sin. We got a heart problem. I mean, how can you fix the heart? What's he going to do in this new covenant? This is the covenant I will establish with the people of Israel after that time, declares the Lord. Here we go. I'll put my laws in their minds and write them on their hearts. I will be their God and they will be my people. I mean, I know the old law was written on stone, but here this new covenant is written on the heart. This is what Ezekiel talked about, isn't it? He talked about a time in the future. Back then he talked about this time in the future when there would be cleansing from sin, when God would give a new heart, when God would give his Holy Spirit. And that this Holy Spirit would move us from the inside to want to obey. Our hearts will be changed. So rather than being compelled externally from stone, we're compelled internally by the Spirit and a heart of flesh. Really, that's a great promise, isn't it? To always be holy. Can you imagine? Just to always be holy, to never be separated. Could it be that what the law was powerless to do and that it was weakened by the flesh, God has done by sending this Jesus as a perfect sacrifice and has given us his Spirit? Could this be the time? Could this be the times that were coming that Jeremiah talked about? Could this be the last days? Could this be the time of the new heart? And I haven't even got it. Jeremiah goes on to say, no longer will they teach their neighbour or say to one another, know the Lord, because they will all know me, from the least to the greatest. Imagine that. Imagine a community of people who were so indwelt by God and His Spirit and washed clean from their sin and given brand new hearts that everyone will know Him. Again, though, you would have to have a perfect sacrifice made by a perfect priest. And that's what Ben's been saying. He just keeps saying to me, it's the whole point. Jesus is the willing sacrifice for me. A willing sinner. Wait a minute. If that was the case, if Jesus had actually, if he was actually the perfect high priest who made the perfect sacrifice, then that would mean perfect forgiveness. Oh, which is exactly what Jeremiah says. For I will forgive their wickednesses and will remember their sins no more. Ben said, the point the preacher is making, the very heart of the message, oh, I can remember him saying this so clearly, is about Jesus the high priest. And the high priest's work was to deal with sin. And Jesus dealt with sin perfectly and permanently because he is the high priest. And if Jesus is this high priest and sin has been dealt with permanently and perfectly, that means there's no more temple. There's no more need for sacrifices. There's no more need for the food laws. There's no more need for keeping Sabbaths. There's no more need for altars. There's no more need for it. It's all finished. Which I suppose would mean to call anyone a priest in that sense of the word, or to call any place an altar, or to think any area is a sanctuary, is lying and blasphemous. Now, this new high priest, therefore, means that the new tabernacle is happening. The new covenant is now. Could it be that in my lifetime, this fulfillment has happened? Could it be the last days, the time of the new covenant? Could it really be that rather than being daily reminded of my sin, with the priests coming and the sacrifices happening all the time, that because of Jesus, I can daily be reminded of my forgiveness? This, the only word I can think about that this is grace. And amazing grace at that, you know. I thought I couldn't believe it, but you know, maybe I can. I got to tell Ben I'm wrong. And I've never been so happy to be proven wrong in my whole life. In fact, if I can believe it, you can believe it too. So, hey, you. Do you believe that Jesus is the high priest? You paid for him totally. Forgiven. You're right. Do you believe we're in the last days? That this the days that Jeremiah talked about now? That he's ushered us in. Can you know that you're forgiven? Totally right with God. No fear, no guilt anymore. Can you know that? Can you know that? I've got to go and tell Ben.
can't say anyone.